Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to CBS News Roundup ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Coming up, Israel under fire.
Seven World Central Kitchen aid workers killed by Israel's military in Gaza.
Wild weather in the Northeast and Tornado Alley.
We have cars flipped over. What a mess.
And earthquakes in Taiwan and the U.S.
My whole bed shook. Everything shook.
I'm Peter King, and we start with the fallout from the Israeli attack that killed seven World Central Kitchen workers. We're delivering humanitarian aid in a well-marked convoy in Gaza. Israel has expressed, quote, deep sorrow and blames the killings on what it calls operational misjudgment. Our reports begin with correspondent Holly Williams in Tel Aviv.
Israel's military says it wrongly believed that a militant was inside one of the World Central Kitchen vehicles. It says after striking that car, it identified people moving to the second car, which it also hit, and then the third, killing all seven aid workers. The report also found that the Israeli military's cameras failed to detect the markings on the World Central Kitchen vehicles. It confirms, in large part, the account of the attack given earlier this week by Chef Jose Andres, World Central Kitchen's founder.
They were targeted systematically, car by car.
Israel also confirmed that World Central Kitchen was coordinating its movements in Gaza with the military. Despite the deaths of the aid workers, a spokesman for Israel's government insisted that Israel is setting a, quote, new gold standard in preventing civilian casualties.
CBS News White House correspondent Weijia Jiang.
President Biden requested those humanitarian corridors to Gaza be opened during a tense 30-minute phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, marking a sharp shift in its handling of the war in Gaza. The Biden administration now says U.S. support of Israel as it takes on Hamas is not guaranteed.
If there are not changes to their approach, it is very likely we're going to change our approach.
The White House said Biden made clear that U.S. policy with respect to Gaza will be determined by Israel's immediate action to increase the flow of humanitarian aid and to protect innocent civilians and aid workers. Delaware Senator Chris Coons, a close confidant of Biden's, is among a growing number of Democrats who are now open to imposing new conditions on military aid.
If Netanyahu were to go ahead without making any provision for getting civilians out of harm's way, for providing humanitarian aid in this unique circumstance where you've got a million civilians who've relocated to Rafah because Israel told them that's where they could go safely. That has reluctantly brought me to this point.
The White House has warned Israel that a major assault on Rafah would be a mistake. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson says President Biden should save his warnings for Hamas, not Israel. One of those killed was a dual U.S.-Canadian citizen, Jacob Flickinger. His father, John.
He was hesitant to go. He's a new father. He has a beautiful 18-month-old son.
World Central Kitchen's officials have called for an independent commission to investigate, saying Israel's military cannot credibly investigate its own failure. In this country, it's been a turbulent weather week. Tornado Alley living up to its name with more than a dozen suspected twisters in the South and Midwest. CBS's Dave Malkoff is in Sunbright, Tennessee, northwest of Knoxville.
From Indiana to Kentucky.
We have cars flipped over. What a mess.
where 5 tornadoes touched down in the state, killing one person.
But what I know and what I have seen is that every time we're hit, we will get through it, and we'll get through it together.
Further south in Georgia, a tornado just missed this church in Conyers.
Even though it laid the tree down, but God still was blessing us because he didn't let it fall on the church.
In Columbus, Ohio, the city is on alert after heavy rain inundated the Scioto River. The river has risen 14 feet from last week. All part of a coast-to-coast storm system that spawned at least 14 reported tornadoes in 6 states, including Tennessee.
We really about lost our lives.
In the town of Sunbright, Alexis Hamby feels lucky her family is alive after a possible tornado hit their home.
Our neighbor grabbed all 4 of us and pulled us in his basement door. I mean, like a real-life superhero.
The week ended with a nor'easter in New England. Some areas getting a foot and a half of snow. Other areas were flooded. Here's correspondent Elaine Quijano.
High winds, heavy snow, and flooding. The Northeast was the final target of a week-long storm with deadly results. In Derry, New Hampshire, a grandmother was killed and her 11-year-old granddaughter was injured in this house explosion. Relatives told CBS News Boston a tree fell onto a propane tank next to the home, causing the blast. The child is expected to survive. The intense nor'easter, with gusts up to 60 miles per hour, knocked out power to more than 500,000 customers across New England, including southern Maine, where a house in West Gardner was engulfed in flames. First responders there believe a generator was used in the garage where the fire started. In Massachusetts,
we heard like the crack, and then the whole house shook.
This tree came crashing down, crushing a car in Nicole Saltzman's driveway in North Reading.
From Boston down to the Mid-Atlantic, it was shake, rattle, and roll with a 4.8 magnitude earthquake centered in Lebanon, New Jersey, and felt in New York and beyond on Friday. WCBS's Tom Kaminsky.
This classic, the way an earthquake is described, that sort of a rumble, but it just kept on building for a little bit, for maybe the first 5 seconds, sort of stayed stagnant that way. And then, as I said, it lasted maybe about 10 seconds and then just sort of died off.
Anecdotally, friends reported feeling it as far away as Ely in New York. That's just east of Utica in central New York. And in Baltimore, it doesn't appear there are any serious injuries, nor were there any serious reports of damage. It's a much different story in Taiwan, where they're digging out and looking for survivors after a much more powerful quake. The 7.4 magnitude earthquake was the largest there in 25 years. At least 10 people are reported killed, more than 1,100 injured. Here's correspondent MTS Taiyab.
The moment the earthquake struck was captured as a morning show was live on air, shaking heavy studio lights as panic jolted through the newsroom. Rush hour commuters were also caught off guard by the 7.4 magnitude quake. So too were passengers in this packed subway car.
It was definitely a shock when it happened.
Yuli Seb Young is originally from California.
The whole room was shaking. We tried to find like somewhere to hide, like under a table.
The epicenter of the quake was near the eastern city of Hualien, where the shaking was so intense, some buildings crashed to the ground. Across Taiwan, dozens of other buildings have also been badly damaged, as some of the smallest survivors had to be carefully rescued.
That's correspondent MTS Taiyab. Coming up, Baltimore businesses after the bridge collapse.
We now have 2 business resource centers that are fully operational.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup,
I'm Peter King. Divers are about to start their third week of clearing the wreckage from Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge. A small shipping channel is now open, but it'll take much more time for the Port of Baltimore to get back to any sense of normality. The same for area businesses. CBS News correspondent Chris Van Cleve spoke with one business owner.
We would normally see people in and out picking and packing and loading up trucks.
For Miranda Summer, a quiet warehouse is bad for the bottom line. Almost immediately, the bridge collapse hit her Baltimore trailer and storage business.
Nobody needs storage when they don't have product to store in it.
How worried are you about your business surviving?
We're hoping to adjust and make the changes, but we definitely, it's the unknown right now.
Summer says she started the application process for a low-interest loan from the Small Business Administration. Already, more than 500 businesses from five states and Washington, D.C. have sought SBA aid of up to $2 million.
The local impact can be devastating for some of the small businesses.
SBA Administrator Isabel Guzman.
We're trying to be as responsive as quickly as possible. Of our disaster loans, economic injury process, it can take up to a couple of weeks.
Why can't those loans get out the door faster?
We got to work with the business to assess the true impact that we've had. Our first approval already, it can be a streamlined process as well.
Florida's conservative state Supreme Court has issued two diametrically opposed rulings on abortion. The first triggers a very short window for women to have the procedures in state. University of Central Florida politics professor Aubrey Jewett.
The underlying principle was abortion rights are no longer protected. And that means now in Florida, we have a 6-week ban with just a few minor exceptions. And so that is one of the tightest abortion restrictions in the country. And of course, what women's rights groups have pointed out is that many pregnant women don't know they're pregnant until 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks.
There are exceptions for rape, incest, human trafficking, or with the health or life of the mother or fetus endangered. But that said, the court has also approved language for a proposed constitutional amendment, which, if approved, would make all of that moot.
Florida voters in November will decide the fate of abortion rights in Florida. And the wording of this amendment says that no law can be passed restricting abortion before viability, basically before a fetus could live outside the mother's womb on its own. If this passes, if Florida voters pass it, and I might add, of course, in Florida, it can't just pass with 50%. For a constitutional amendment, it has to pass with 60%. So if it can get 60% of Florida voters, we will basically turn back the clock to before the U.S. Supreme Court overruled Roe v. Wade.
Jewett says that may not be the end of it, assuming Republicans keep their majority after the election.
It will not shock me if the legislature and the governor try to, at the margins anyway, figure out ways to still make it more difficult for a woman to exercise her right to an abortion.
He says, for example, lawmakers could add more restrictions for practitioners. This is arguably college basketball's biggest weekend.
Our Final Fours are set on both sides.
While millions of fans have busted their brackets, others are certainly hoping for a big score for both men's and women's tournaments. Legalized sports betting has become perhaps bigger than anyone imagined in this country, but with big wins come staggering losses for compulsive gamblers. Arnie Wexler is a recovering gambler who made his last bet in 1968. Since then, he's been helping problem gamblers beat their addiction.
Almost every day I get a call from parents or the kids, mostly the parents, that the kids are in college. I got one case in Chicago where the kid tells the parents, I can't go back to school. I'll be an outcast. I'm the only one not gambling. My grandson is a teacher in New Jersey, and he tells me all his friends and everybody's gambling. And it's an explosion. And the government's taking a piece of the action, and the state's taking a piece of the action, and the leagues are getting a piece of the action. And nobody cares how they're destroying this country with gambling addiction.
20 years ago when you and I first met, I don't think either one of us would have imagined that online sports betting would become what it became and as widespread and legal in so many places. And of course, they advertise heavily during sports events. I imagine that you would believe has a huge influence on all of this.
Well, you can't watch a ball game or a football game or a baseball game without the ads for the gambling. It's so crazy that, you know, it's all about sucking money in, and it's not about caring about what they're doing to this country and the young kids today in this country. You got people that would never, ever gamble illegally, and they wouldn't gamble with a bookmaker. And if they have the gene to be a compulsive gambler, and now it's legal and they start, they can whack out their whole life. And that's what's happening today. And the other crazy thing is, when I came for help in 1968, there were no women seeking help for compulsive gambling. Today, about 40% of all the people today in America seeking help are females. And it's an explosion.
Do the gambling hotlines, that is the gambling help hotlines, heat up during a weekend like this?
Nobody who's a compulsive gambler is going to call for help before their bets. They always think this is going to be the bailout. This is going to change their life. This is going to make them a winner. But after the World Series and after Super Bowl and after any big event that's gambled on, that's when you get the calls. And they're tremendous, and they're so sad listening to these people. I was at a meeting the other day, and there's a 17-year-old kid and a 19-year-old kid. One kid is clean 3 weeks, and the other kid has been clean 3 months, and he's gambled twice in the last 3 months.
So what do these people do if they're in trouble?
Well, hopefully they're going to come back and seek help. But what's happened in the last couple of years is these young kids come to a meeting and they look around and then they go back and tell their parents, I'm not like those people. Everybody's there 40, 50, 60, 70 years old. I'm 18, I'm 20, I'm 22, and I don't belong there. And unless you get a few of them coming together, they don't understand that they're like us old guys.
It's entirely possible that somebody might hear this and hear some of the things that you've said and say, wow, that's me. I need help. Where can people like that turn to?
I hope that's the case. My number is 888-LAST-BET. My website is aswexler@aol.com. And if you put in Arnie Wexler, you'll be able to see a lot of articles on compulsive gambling. I'd love to get calls from somebody who's looking for help today.
Once again, Arnie Wexler can be reached via email at aswexler@aol.com. Coming up, a small town prepares for thousands of eclipse watchers.
We will have one-way traffic right up here along this bridge.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
Welcome back to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Peter King. Monday's solar eclipse has me thinking of a classic movie, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, 1949. Bing Crosby goes back into time and convinces the court and its followers that he has magical powers.
Now with a few well-chosen words, I shall blot out the sun forever. Walla Walla, Washington! Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania!
Punxsutawney is at least close to the path for Monday's eclipse, which goes from southwest to northeast, with millions of people traveling to those destinations. We'll go to both ends of the spectrum, starting with correspondent Janet Shamlian.
In Kerrville, Texas, the bell tower's hourly chime is more like a countdown clock. As the city of about 25,000 prepares to balloon to potentially 100,000 or more.
How are you going to absorb 3 to 4 times your population Monday?
Very carefully.
Mayor Judy Eichner showed us the site of Kerrville's free festival, where NASA will live stream the Out of This World event. The city has made unique plans, better known for use during hurricanes.
We will have one-way traffic right up here along this bridge.
So you're changing the traffic flow
yes.
of the city?
Absolutely.
We're getting visitors from all over the world.
A Kerrville nonprofit nonprofit owns this land. It's never been a campsite, but is about to become one of the area's busiest.
We have people calling us for the past few years, wondering if we were going to do anything for the eclipse. We kind of got pressured into it by the public.
I got a chicken fried chicken, gravy all over.
At Kerrville favorite Billie Jean's, it's all hands on deck, from the kitchen.
Okay, the freezer.
To the packed freezer.
So we definitely have more ice cream here behind you.
Owner Crystal Smith believes the next few days will be record breakers.
Normal Monday, how many customers would you serve?
Between 600 and 700.
How many will you serve on Monday with the eclipse?
We're anticipating probably 1,600.
And as for those early predictions of cloud cover,
we can't worry about that, you know? That's the one thing we don't have control over.
That's CBS News correspondent Janet Shamlian. And from Texas, we go to the other end of the eclipse path, to Rochester, New York, my former hometown. Hillary Olson, president and CEO of the Rochester Museum and Science Center, joins us. Hillary, you guys are hosting an entire festival this weekend. It's exciting, and it's full of all kinds of activities. What's going on?
We are thrilled to be hosting the Rock the Eclipse Festival. It's the biggest event happening in Rochester, New York for the eclipse. The entire city is excited about this, and there's a lot of things going on. The Rock the Eclipse Festival has Saturday, Sunday, and Monday will be filled indoors and outdoors with activities having to do with space and science and the eclipse and engineering and robotics and all kinds of fun things for families, for adults, for kids. And Monday, the big day, we will have astronaut Lee Morin on a stage talking about his life on the International Space Station. And then the big show will happen, whether or not it's cloudy, whether or not it's raining. It will happen up in the sky right above us.
We're seeing so much about eclipse tourism from end to end of this swath that somewhere in the neighborhood of a million people are headed to Niagara Falls and that part of Western New York. And they actually declared a state of emergency, which is that's a little bit nuts. But I mean, what are you hearing about people coming to Rochester specifically?
We were expecting between 300 and 500,000 people. Now that we know a little bit more about the forecast, we actually are thinking that we might receive more people coming into Rochester. So the size of the city might actually double. People that you know, have an extra spare room, they have friends and family coming in from out of town. The hotels are sold out. And it's become a real tourism bonanza. A tourism bonanza for our whole region. We have, you know, anybody that's running a brewery or a restaurant or a bar or a winery or a museum, we are going to be seeing thousands upon thousands of people, and Rochester's really doing it right, rolling out the red carpet for all those trips.
You know, Rochester is a city of festivals, and I can remember when I lived there, there was a festival every weekend, seemingly. But I mean, this, if you'll pardon the pun, really eclipses everything.
It does. It does. And also, usually Rochester is not known for its great weather in early April, but it's looking like we're one of the best cities for viewing on the entire path of totality. It is bigger than anything else the city has done.
The concept of an eclipse is pretty simple. The moon moves in front of the sun and blacks it out. But do people have misconceptions about what an eclipse is and what the effects are?
There's a lot of misconceptions out there. So the moon is really close to us. It's 360,000 miles away. The sun is really far from us. It's 93 million miles away. Because of a trick of nature, they look like they're the same size from our, because they're so far apart, they look like they're the same size from our perspective. And that's why an eclipse happens. But I think the biggest misconception that we hear is people are afraid of the eclipse, or that somehow the sun is dangerous, or something else during an eclipse. And the biggest message we're trying to send is the sun's no different during an eclipse. It's just the moon's coming in front of it from our perspective on the path. And if you want to look at the sun, you should always wear safe solar viewing glasses or have some sort of filter on your camera. But we've all made it through our entire lives without staring directly at the sun for any length of time. So you know, we know how to be outdoors.
I'm hearing from a friend in North Carolina that people in his market are talking almost survivalist mode and saying, oh, the eclipse is going to bring down the entire power grid. It's the end of the world, and all kinds of other conspiracy theories. You know, that stuff.
That's not a thing. That's not going to happen. So, you know, anybody that's relying on solar power, and if you're in the path of totality, you might have 3 or 4 minutes of nighttime, essentially. So yeah, your power consumption or your power intake will go down for those 3 minutes, but it will go down the same way it goes down at night, every single night. So it's not a scary thing. It's an awe-inspiring thing. It's a beautiful and really getting people outside to enjoy it and see it and think about astronomy is one of our biggest goals.
And we can hear from the tone of your voice just how excited you are about all of this and being right in the middle of the path.
Yes, I actually, when I took this position in 2018, I knew that Rochester, New York was in the path of totality for this eclipse, and I was determined to make sure the city was prepared. And so together, many of us have put together, like I said, a red carpet for everybody that's coming and a level of understanding amongst our neighborhoods and communities that this is a fun thing, this is an exciting thing, and it's a worthwhile thing. It's not scary, it's not, there's no end times, there's nothing bad about it. It's a positive shared experience, which is something that we don't get to have very often.
That's Hillary Olson, President and CEO of the Rochester, New York Museum and Science Center. We would love for you to follow us on X social media at CBS News Radio. Coming up next, putting the color into country music on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Welcome back to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Peter King, and this is The Kaleidoscope, where we talk about issues that affect people who aren't always heard. This week, we're talking about color in country music. Till the early 1970s, country was lily white.
You got to kiss an angel good morning and let her know you think about her when you're gone.
That changed with Charlie Pride, the first African-American country star, who had that breakthrough hit record released in 1971. But Charlie's record company was reluctant to put his picture on the album cover because of the fear that country radio and fans wouldn't go for it. Since then, of course, Charlie Pride became a Country Music Hall of Famer. Nashville has opened up a lot more. Think Mickey Guyton and Darius Rucker for contemporary examples. That said, country radio still resisted this song.
This ain't Texas. Ain't no hold'em.
It's Beyoncé's Texas Hold'em and her album Cowboy Carter. Country radio programmers perhaps thinking a dance artist just didn't belong until the song and album quickly started selling, and now Beyoncé has become the first black woman to top Billboard's country chart. CBS's Lana Zack speaks with TikTok radio SiriusXM host Lamar Dawson about it.
You know, Beyoncé says that this album was born from an experience where she didn't feel welcome. A lot of people think that we know what she's talking about.
Right, right.
Give us some of the history.
Yeah, some of the history. If you look back at the Country Music Awards, allegedly we'll say, because she didn't say it.
She didn't say it.
But if you look back at that performance of Daddy Lessons with the Chicks and watch that performance, the audience was quite divided on if she was welcome there or not. And she says that a moment during that time sparked her interest to really deep dive in the history of country music and her place within it. And that's what she's doing on this record.
And specifically, Black culture and Black contributions
completely
to country music.
100%.
Talk about that a little
bit. Well, you know, it goes way back, and I think it's a genre that's been kind of taken from Black people, and this whole era is about reclaiming that. However, there are so many successful Black creators already in the space, but she's really just taking it and elevating it and giving them a voice as well. And a lot of them are appreciating Beyonce for doing so, but it goes back to the songwriters, the musicians, the instruments themselves started with Black culture.
And Lamar, you know, when we're talking about culture, Beyonce is culture. Like,
totally.
She defines culture.
Yes.
And this album, we're already seeing Cowboy Carter developing new fashion trends.
Yes.
I mean,
Exhibit
okay.
A, exactly. Well, you've seen it over TikTok. You know, the search is like cowgirl aesthetic, cowboy core. Like, the search is there for the outfits, for the jackets, for the denim. She's really sparking a whole fashion craze right now. But you're already seeing it on the red carpets, too, and on fashion, because Pharrell did it in Paris. Mm-hmm. Rihanna did it recently as well. So you're going to see a lot of that.
Well, and you know, part of what makes this album, I think, really remarkable is how she reaches deep into country music history, like legends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Willie Nelson,
yeah,
Dolly Parton, singing
Linda
Jolene
Martell.
Like we heard.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, she makes it her own. Like,
totally.
Let's talk about Jolene.
Jolene,
for a second,
those
because
lyrics.
You and I know. And she took this iconic song with Dolly Parton's
right.
blessing
yes.
and made it her own,
completely.
changing certain things from
Dolly
begging
Parton, to
warning.
Exactly. You know, Beyonce doesn't play about Jay-Z. So don't mess with her man.
Well, this isn't the first time that Beyonce has shifted genres. I mean,
right.
we were talking about this in the producer group. Renaissance, let's talk about that as electric music.
Electric
and
dance.
Then, right, EDM maybe. And then you have Cowboy Carter being
right.
a dip into country.
Right.
What do you think's up next for her?
You know, my serious response is that it could be rock, because she's going back from dance where she was looking at the stories of untold singers, songwriters, musicians in the dance space, mainly Black people in the ballroom scene. Now she's doing the same thing with country music. Could she do the same thing with rock and roll, perhaps? But I kind of want like a parody Weird Al album. Go crazy. Go go comedy, Beyonce. Give us something completely left field.
That would be interesting. What's your favorite song? Or your most surprising?
Oh my gosh. Most surprising, maybe Bodyguard.
Okay.
Bodyguard.
I was
yeah.
most surprised by Blackbird, that
so
she took another iconic song known by the Beatles and turned that not only into her own, but also with this country beat.
Totally. It's remarkable because if you look back at Paul McCartney's interviews about that song, it was a love letter to Black girls, Blackbird meaning a double meaning for Black women. So she's taking it, and now she has four Black country artists also on there with her singing it. It's really remarkable what she's doing. We're going to be studying this album for a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Take those broken wings and learn to fly, y'all.
Oh, I love that.
That's CBS's Lana Zack with Lamar Dawson. You know, Beyonce did shoot for the moon with that country album, and in 1961, so did Air Force Captain Ed Dwight. At a time when NASA was also Lily White, President John F. Kennedy pushed the space agency to make Dwight the first Black astronaut candidate. For various and sometimes disputed reasons, Dwight never got off the ground. He didn't fly in space, but that's about to change. Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin company says at age 90, Ed Dwight will be on the company's next suborbital flight, date to be determined. NASA hopes to land the first person of color and the first woman on the moon on its third Artemis mission in 2026. This past Wednesday, the agency announced a three-company competition for the next generation moon rover, and NASA Administrator Bill Nelson spoke with us about it.
Not only does it allow the astronauts to get around and therefore explore a lot more territory, it, in fact, carries a whole bunch of science payloads. And when the astronauts are not using it, in other words, when we have to send our astronauts back to lunar orbit and then to return to Earth, this platform remains on the surface conducting science and can be remotely manipulated to move around the lunar surface to pick up samples, depending on the science instruments on board, to continue to do the sampling of whatever is happening, the radiation, to sample soil samples, So it becomes an extension of our astronauts. Each of them have a different concept of how they're going to get there, what they're going to do. Our experts at NASA are going to decide which is the best one in about a year, and then we'll proceed and we will plan to land this thing before Artemis 5.
The first moon rover flew on Apollo 15, 1971. And there are many questions about the coming Artemis missions, like, will NASA make its goal of returning Americans to the moon by the end of 2026? Coming up, we'll ask NASA Administrator Bill Nelson about that, along with Boeing's new human spacecraft and more. That's next on the CBS Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Welcome back. As we've said, NASA hopes to fly astronauts around the moon next year and land them there in 2026 for the first time since 1972. But much of that depends on SpaceX, the development of its giant Starship rocket and lunar lander. We continue our conversation with NASA Administrator Bill Nelson.
They are just beginning to perfect their huge, huge rocket. And the huge spacecraft called Starship, that is going to have another flight in May. And each one of those flights, they figure out what went wrong, they correct it. And that is the modus operandi of SpaceX.
How many flights would it take, will it take, for the Starship lander to demonstrate that it works and it's safe enough for humans to fly?
The plan is two. They are going to land a test vehicle about a year before the actual landing, and then the landing with two of the four astronauts will be, right now it's scheduled in September of 26. Of course, that could slip because you're developing a whole new vehicle.
And there are so many long poles in this because they're talking about refueling in space and those kinds of capabilities. There's a whole lot that's got to be proven before they can do this.
Indeed. This is state-of-the-art stuff. But it is also a part of utilizing the ingenuity and creativity of the private sector. Their ways of doing things differently. And mind you, NASA is all over this because this is human life. This is our NASA astronauts. But we've already seen the success of that in the Falcon 9 and the Dragon capsule to low Earth orbit. So here we go.
Turning from the moon to the International Space Station and your commercial crew program to get astronauts there, Boeing is about to launch its first Starliner spacecraft after years of delays with the first astronauts aboard next month. Given the company's troubles with its aircraft division, I'm just wondering what your confidence level is in Boeing and its spacecraft.
We won't fly until it's ready. We won't fly until we think it's safe. We think it is. And it should be launching on the 6th. I think it's the 6th of May.
That's NASA Administrator Bill Nelson. Now some more earthly concerns with the federal income tax filing deadline just over a week away. We're being warned to keep an eye out for scams. CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger talks about it with CBS Morning's co-host Nate Burleson. And they start with some of the so-called Dirty Dozen scams. The first one on the list.
Sensitive taxpayer information or phishing scams. Break this down for us.
Phishing and, you ready for this, smishing. SMS or text messaging.
Okay.
Just think about this. Before you even consider scams, remember that the IRS is not texting you and the IRS is not actually sending you an email.
Okay, say that again. You have to say that again.
They're not emailing you. So put your big defense mechanism up. And also know that they'll only call you if you've actually been notified by mail prior. Mm. So what we're trying to do is identify any inbound communication that seems to be from the IRS or from a state tax agency. They are preying on fear and greed. Fear, we're freezing your account. Greed, you've got a tax refund. You get something like that, especially if it's time sensitive, then you just run the other way.
Hook, line, and sinker. They get you right there. All right, so for people who want to set up online accounts with the IRS, there are also people scamming those folks.
Exactly. And so we talked about this earlier this week. I said, hey, go to the IRS.gov, set up your own account. There are now inbound solicitations of companies that are saying, we'll set up the account for you. They are phishing or smishing you. Mm. They're trying to get your personal information so they can set up an account, get your personal information, file returns for you. Only do this yourself at IRS.gov.
All right. So what is check washing?
Okay. This is like an old school scam, gang. And it is not part of the Dirty Dozen yet, but this is rampant across the country.
So how does it work?
Basically, thieves go into a mailbox, they pull out checks, they use nail polish remover, they basically wash the amount, they then steal it and cash it. Okay, this is important. To avoid this, try to go to your local post office to deposit your checks. Be very careful. Monitor your accounts. Use black gel pens because they're harder to mess with. Be on alert, my friends.
So this was late 90s when this was really happening. Now these old school scams are coming back.
This was not a scam, but rather a major league robbery to the tune of $30 million stolen from a Los Angeles area armored car company's cash storage facility. More from KNX Radio's John Baird.
The belief is the burglars got in through the roof of the building and didn't set off any alarms. A hole could be seen in the side of the facility that was boarded up. The building is not far off Interstate 5, miles northwest of downtown L.A. A security analyst, Paul Violas, thinks it's likely an inside job.
It really begs the question how many people from the inside were involved to provide information to the outside for the group to do what they did without showing any sign of break-in.
This is believed to be one of the largest burglaries in L.A. history in terms of how much cash was stolen.
Law enforcement has caught up with the suspects in a different kind of robbery. Correspondent Deborah Rodriguez has that story from New York.
Eight men in New York City have been charged with stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of imported beer. Federal prosecutors say they snatched up Mexican-made Modelo and Corona by the palletful by robbing rail yards and warehouses across the Northeast over a two-year period. They're accused of cutting holes in fencing and locks on rail cars, then using a U-Haul truck to load up the goods. They allegedly recruited accomplices via Instagram. A ninth suspect is still at large.
Just in time for the summer concert tours, we're learning which performers earned the most last year.
Taylor Swift's Eras Tour brought in more than $1 billion. And Beyoncé's concerts were close behind in revenue last year. Event producer Live Nation, which owns Ticketmaster, reported this week that concert attendance jumped 20% in 2023 compared to the year before, hitting 145 million. Ticket sales for the top 100 tours of the year were up almost 50% compared to 2022. Wendy Gillette, CBS News.
And that's it for the Weekend Roundup. What a week it has been for news. Of course, we want your feedback, and we hope you will send us your thoughts and story ideas to weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. You can always find the program online, wherever you get your podcasts. Weekend Roundup is usually produced in the CBS News Washington Bureau. This week, it came to you from Orlando. Sarah Fishman is our technical supervisor, production assistance from Alan Peng. Thank you so much for listening and have a great weekend. I'm Peter King, CBS News.
If you like CBS News Roundup, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
The Hargan women seem to have it all.
From the outside looking in, we were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But as detectives would soon learn, there was a lot going on inside the Hargan household.
Ashley and I have been calling my mom and the house and Helen. No one's answering.
63-year-old Pamela Hargan gunned down in her own home. Her youngest daughter, Helen, lay dead upstairs.
Patrol, when they arrived, assumed or thought that there might have been a murder-suicide.
But for the detectives on the scene,
there were things about the scene itself that were concerning to us on day one.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister?
There is no boogeyman here. It is exactly who we think it is.
I'm Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours. This is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.